C1A. Number 15A.
Then we come to the fifth subject of life, which last time we have taken rather extensively. I spent about 2 hours on it, so I may take it a bit shorter, although it's naturally one of the most comforting subjects, as life always is. I think I say that about every synonym. She ends principle as love with that high statement that Jesus healed the sick and so on, and sent to John the Baptist to relate to John the Baptist what Jesus has done in order to show him and prove to him that God is the power in the messianic work. Not Jesus, but God. He takes the whole subject away from the person of Jesus and back into principle. That God is the power in the messianic work. It works what? Humanly seen and to human sense, it looked as healing, as raising the dead. Divinely seen, it was proving God to be life and matter to be death, to be powerless, unintelligent, unreal. Humanly seen, it was as if that which Jesus proved would be an improvement of material life, a better material life, a better corporeal life. Divinely seen, he was proving God to be life and matter to be lifeless. That matter and body had no claim whatever on man. And so start writing at life, saying that life, God, Jesus proved by his reappearance after the crucifixion, according to his state, destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will rise up. He begins for the very first time to state that life is God. So typical, she doesn't say that God is life. She leads thought upward, and not from the subjective. You see, through atonement, thought is led upward. And having shown that principle, and atoning with principle, has spiritual power, and that this spiritual power presents itself as healing and raising the dead, that it presents itself to human sense as better life, as a better material or human sense of life, she resurrects now thought and must rectify that and say, but what she proves is that life is God. It didn't prove that life is material and good material, and that life is organic and good organic. He proved that life is nothing else but God. And the whole subject which he now deals with is to show that life is God and that life is not that which the world considers to be life. That's the subject. In other words, what she asks here is that atonement really demands a divine sense of life, and that this brings with itself that Eucharist, namely the laying down of a mortal sense of life. That's what shows here. We come to the point which mortals have great difficulty to accept, namely to stick to the fact that life is God, that life is not material, corporeal, structural, human, worldly, business life, social life. That life is God and nothing besides that. And therefore, atonement demands that inwardly and certainly and definitely and lovingly and principally we atone with the big fact that life is only God, and that finally we give up and urges us to give up that false sense which is established in the human mind that life is some way or other something else but God, that it is material, that it is sinful life, a sick life, a deadly life, a social life, worldly life, a corporeal life, an organic life, a hell of a life. That's what he showed at the end, the heaven of life against the hell of life. You know, we say this, we say that life is God, and no one in this hall would deny it. But what are you going to think and feel and do if one of your nearest friends dies, is killed in an accident or anything? Are you still atoned at that wonderful sense that life is God and not body, and not human, and not a person, and not timely, that life is never buried in a body, in a person, in a grave? Are you really then sticking to that stone that life is God and not your friend, not your parent, not your child, not your neighbor? Well, that's atonement. What's the good of knowing that God is life if you don't believe in it? If you don't believe in it? If when the winds blow and the human sense of life, the worldly sense of life, the material sense of life says somebody has died, somebody has killed. So this is a mighty point. It is that point where we can only be secure and definite in that wonderful sense that only that life is only God. If through the first four subjects we have seen that principle only demonstrates life and never something else. If we have seen through the first four subjects that the healing, the spiritual power of principle, the healing that results from our unity and atonement with principle, that healing is nothing else but a demonstration of life and never a demonstration of better material condition, never a demonstration of better corporeal health, never a demonstration of better this and better that, but only one thing to prove that God is the power in the messianic work. If we have seen that, if we have seen that principle cannot demonstrate anything else but life, which then is the only truth of the universe, a truth which only fulfills the purpose of principle as love. If we have seen that, then death has no shock on us. Then death has no terror on us, whatever happens. And each one of us can check himself and can say to himself, well, if something happens, what is called death, what does it do to me? Does it pull me down? Does it make me sad? And so on. If so, then I know that I am atoned with a false sense of life, that I am one with a false, completely false sense of life. Because nobody of us has ever said that God has died, or God has... So if God is life, and life is only God, and nothing happens to life. All that happens is that something happens to our false sense of life and to somebody else's false sense of life, but always to a false sense of life. And so to a false sense of life, something can happen and may easily happen, and it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter as long as we see that life is God, and God is God, is unchanged. So in this subject of life, we find over and over and over again, that's why I put that question in the questionnaire, that life is always the embodiment of principle. That it is shown there that principle always proves itself as life. And that there is no life without the demonstration of principle. So that life is always the embodiment of principle, which means that only that which is of the divine principle is really life, and therefore that everything that is not of the divine principle has never had life, has never lived, will never live, and can never live. That's what we have to see through. Now we say these things, and we agree when we say them, but it's just saying. It must be born in us, and it can be born in us through the order of the days of creation, to that point where you really are no more shocked by death, where it just has no claim on us, just no claim on us. Then we have a certain feeling that somehow we have begun to atone ourselves with life. We may not have yet demonstrated the full sense of life, as Jesus did, but we have begun to demonstrate to overcome death by first overcoming it in mind, life as mind. That's where we begin to overcome death, that in our mind death has no more terror than we have atoned. That's what she says in life as mind. So all what we have to deal with here really is what we find very often in the textbook when it comes to the tone of life, with the misunderstanding of life. That death is really only a misunderstanding of life, nothing more. And if you have gone through question 55, you will have seen in all the subtones how this misunderstanding of life creeps up time and time and time again. How it is just a false concept of life. Every denial that life is God is death. Trying to find life in anything else but as God is death. So the persecutor, as she says here, is the belief that spirit can be in the grasp of matter. That's the big persecutor of truth and love. Persecutor is always a sense of a false sense of life, of following the true life. The counterfeit of it is persecuting it. And whenever we try to find or see or demonstrate or wish life in anything, try to hold the spirit in the grasp of matter, that's death. That's death. What she says here, I just go through the subtones quickly. What she says here, that atonement demands first to stand for life as indestructible. You see, that's where what I said. Jesus stood, he challenged people and said, life is indestructible, you can't destroy it. I let you try it, but it's indestructible. Well, that's where we begin to demonstrate our victory over death, with life as mine. If we only have that demonstrated, we have done a big step. Where we say, do we really stand for life as indestructible? If we do, we stand for it. And then no sense, no human sense, no human argument comes into our thought that life has been destroyed or could be destroyed or will be destroyed. Is life, as she shows here, completely metaphysical, as above matter, never dependent on matter, indestructible. Now, we have to ask ourselves these questions, because it's a universal belief, death. This is a universal belief, and it's something which each one of us has to face for himself individually, and in hundreds and thousands of times for one's friends and relatives and I don't know what. What have we atoned to that point where inwardly, securely and definitely we know that life is God or not? If we have atoned to that, then we stand for that, and we are not shaken by any other argument, and we are not shaken by any so-called death. He goes on and says that life, that atonement demands to give up the doctrine of pantheism, the doctrine of life in or of matter, that life mingles within sickness and mass. Have you atoned to that point where we really see and are convinced and that it becomes natural that life is God, spirit, and that life is not mingled with the body? We must do. That's where our victory over the grave, over death and the grave starts. We can't wait until we die and then 5 minutes before try to demonstrate victory over death. That's starting at the end. That's no ordering. Where we start is right now, individually and with each case. With each case where it tries to drag us down, away, break that atonement, break that unity, that life is God. And when we sit down and just work that out step by step, it will give us an inward conviction that nothing will anymore touch us, which is called death or accident. Then she goes on and shows that atonement demands a spiritual understanding which alone has a lasting history. Do we believe? Are we atoned with that? Are we atoned with that? And we know it exactly when a case of death happens. Do we see that that which is true about an individuality in a spiritual way, that has a lasting history? Or do we feel that the history of an individuality goes down and is lost and is buried and is nil and void when his body goes away? Or do we see that all that anybody ever expressed in the way of spiritual qualities is of God and not of him, and therefore is and can never have been? are always ease and ease and ease. Can we see that from every friend and relative, father, mother, daughter, sons, uncles, aunts, friends, and I don't know what, that only that is life which is of spiritual qualities, and that that which is of spiritual qualities, that only that really has ever lived? The body never has lived. A person's personal sense has never lived. Matter has never lived. Could never give life, nor could it taken away from matter. Do we, have we atoned to that sense where spiritual qualities are the history of a true individuality? That's what he says. And so with us, have we atoned to the sense of life as soul with us, where we see that only that which happened in the on the plane of spiritual qualities, that that only has ever lived about us, and that everything else which we remember in our life, which is not of God, has never lived, has never lived. It's a dirty lie that it has lived. It's a dirty lie. The devil that says all the rats and all the bad things and all the mistakes and all the what happened in your life, that happened, that was, that's your history. It's not true. It's not true. It's never true if we have atoned with mind, spirit, soul to principle, and there we see that only that which principle demonstrates is of the nature of God, is only that which is of, has a messianic work. And that he was always demonstrating life as God and never as something else. And so everything in us which is not of the nature of God never lived, just never lived. It never came from principle. It never had the authority of principle. It never had the sustenance of life. It never was supported by life. It never was invigorated by life. Just one big misunderstanding of life. That's all it is. But we have to atone with that wonderful comforter, with that Christ word. It goes on and says, that atonement demands, as life as principle, atonement demands the demonstration of the principle of life and not the profession to a doctrine of life. Here she brings the world sense of life. She says, now be careful. If life is God, then life is not the world sense of life. And she says, therefore, be careful that we don't try to atone and to demonstrate the world's sense of life, because that is death. That is death. What we have to demonstrate is the principle of life, and not the world's sense of life. The world's sense of life is recapitulated there, that life has a beginning and end, is destructive. The world's sense of life is that life must be connected with matter, or it isn't life. The world sense of life doesn't accept life which is not connected with matter. That which the world cannot touch with the fingers has no life for the world. And third, she says there, and the world sense of life denies resurrection. That's why they weep on the grave. That's why they are sad on the grave. They put that poor dead down and down and down instead of resurrection, 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 because they don't see that life is God. And that life is soul. That life is soul, and soul always resurrects. That soul always gives us a chance to get out of any pit. I remember John Dolly saying at the class, one of the few things I remember, the whole class, he said, if the devil can make a hole, God is certainly able to fill it up. That's what he says here. Life is big enough to resurrect. If the world sense of life tries pull something down, well, life of soul certainly has the ability to resurrect, because life just can't help being soul. Just can't help being soul. And soul just can't help being that what it is, namely to be the representative and have a representative of soul, of God. Therefore resurrect. Goes on to the life as life and says that atonement demands the recognition that the divine sense of life finds no support. Life is always that which supports, provides, feeds. But that the divine sense of life never finds support in the mortal sense of life, in the world sense of life. Now, we are at the point where we must remember that. Now, that's a command from me. I mean, must remember that, because if we are going to give birth to our new Christ manhood, we will certainly find no support from the world sense of life. They just can't. If they could, something would be wrong. Because only the divine can feed the divine. Only the divine supports the divine. The mortal never feeds the divine. The mortal never supports the divine. And therefore, what she says here, that not a single component part of Jesus' life was measured aright by the world. The world just couldn't. And in a little way and measure, it's true of every individuality. The moment we demonstrate life on the basis of a principle, we can be sure that the world will not understand us. That's the bigger misunderstanding of life. And therefore will not support our sense of life. And we shouldn't be dumbfounded by it. We shouldn't be downcast by it. No! God is life. Why should we have support from the world if God is life? If life is God not big enough to support himself? Does God need the acknowledgement of the world and of error and the world and the mortal sense of life? No. God is much bigger than that. God supports itself.